Welcome to Season 7 of the HPS Cast. I'm your host, Colbert Cannon. If you're new to the pod, HPS is a global investment firm. We manage approximately $95 billion in assets for a broad range of institutional and retail investors. That capital is invested across private credit and public credit strategies. Each week, I sit down with key relationships to, partners of, and friends of the firm to learn from their experience, ask how that experience shapes their current roles, and give insights into HPS and how we operate. So with that, let's bring in our guest. Our guest this week is the CEO of a technology company focused on analytics, primarily for sports and entertainment businesses. She graduated from Harvard, where she was a star on the Crimson basketball team. And after a brief stint playing pro ball overseas, she joined Mitchell Madison Consulting before returning to Cambridge to Harvard Business School. She then moved to the Kraft Sports Group, the holding company for the NFL's New England Patriots, the MLS team, the New England Revolution, and their arena, Gillette Stadium. She was there for over a decade and eventually became the VP of Customer Marketing and Strategy for Kraft. Along the way, in 2006, she was one of the founders of what is widely considered the most important event of the year in sports data, the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference. In that vein, 10 years later, she moved within the Kraft organization to become the CEO of Kraft Analytics Group, which helps a range of businesses harness the power of data and analytics to drive success. She is a rightfully well-respected executive and entrepreneur, having won awards like Sports Business Journal's 40 Under 40, but much more importantly, she's a longtime and dear friend of mine, and I always love hearing what she's up to. So without any further ado, I'm thrilled to welcome in this week's HPS Cast guest, Jess Gelman, CEO of Kraft Analytics Group. Jess, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, I'm so happy to be here.
Jess, let's start from the beginning. I want to go all the way back. Where did you grow up? Where are you from?
Outside of Chicago. Yes, I grew up in a suburb called Highland Park, which is about a half an hour from downtown Chicago. And as you might imagine, I did a lot of sports there, which piqued my initial curiosity in sports. Michael Jordan was a pretty big figure in my childhood, as well as the Chicago Bears made an incredible run in the 85-86 season to the Super Bowl.
So you come to Harvard undergrad. Why was that the right choice for you?
You know, there's so many different decisions about where you're going to go to school. And for me, obviously, the academics played a key role, but as importantly was the basketball program, my teammates, who are some of my best friends in the world, and the coach, Kathy Delaney Smith, who just retired this past year after 40 years as the basketball coach. She first started coaching at the beginning of the Title IX era, and her impact in terms of belief in oneself, especially for women at that kind of critical stage of our lives. I'm so happy that I made the decision to go and play and learn from her, but also the types of people that she recruited into the program became role models, mentors, and people to aspire to be like. So that was a huge driver. And then one of the great things about Harvard, as you know, since we were classmates there, is the diversity of people and diversity of thought.
That's fantastic. What did you study undergrad, Jess?
I studied psychology, which people think like, oh, you were like wanting to become a psychologist and, you know, have people sit on your couch. Well, that's not what psychology is like at Harvard. It was very statistically oriented. So I had to take three advanced stats classes, which I'm really thankful for. But what I loved about Harvard and the dynamics that, well, I don't know if it's just Harvard, but maybe any organization that takes a quantitative approach to behavioral science is how can you measure with test and controls why things happen. And in a lot of what I studied in school and what I did my kind of equivalent of a thesis on was around what are the characteristics of people who perform well in pressure situations.
This is where it all started, Jess. I love it.
Well, and I think to think about it from the context of like, yes, sports is one avenue, but we all are dealing with pressure situations in various points in our life, and the pressures change and what it is. And so it's very transferable. So for me, for a long time, speaking in public felt like a huge pressure situation, or going in and having a big pitch to a prospective client, or, you know, going and speaking with the Krafts and saying, hey, you know, let's create this company together, which is Kager. Those are all big pressure situations. And some of the key things that I learned when studying performance under pressure in college has really laid the groundwork for how I prepare myself for those situations today. But all of those things that was around statistics and analytics, again, laid the groundwork for what I've been doing in my professional career, which is bringing an understanding of customers through data and analytics to creating better experiences for people who are going to sporting events or entertainment events.
Jess, I mentioned your basketball career. You were an incredible basketball player, four-year letter winner, two-time Ivy selection. You graduate, you're not quite done. You did play pro hoops for a while. Tell us about your pro hoops career before you got back to the business world.
Okay, so, well, first of all, I want to say that the skills that I learned playing basketball at Harvard were really foundational in terms of time management. That was super critical, but also more than that was about understanding the strengths and weaknesses of my teammates and setting them up to be successful.
Let me interrupt to say, Jess was an awesome point guard, relevant for this part of the story. Let's keep going, Jess.
Thank you. But also the real-time feedback that I was getting about from my teammates, from my coaches, about like what I wasn't doing well. I think those are like just critical things. Learning how to take feedback and evolve and grow in that environment is so critical. But yeah, so I had an amazing experience. And when I was growing up, there wasn't the WNBA. It actually was founded the year that I graduated from college. I actually didn't even know until maybe like December of my senior year, so about 6 months before I graduated, that you could go and play overseas. I thought it was a really unique opportunity to go and play in Israel and dedicate myself really 100% of my time to playing basketball, because obviously in college, you're managing not only playing a sport, but the academics and then a little bit of social life. And so this concept of being able to train and think and mentally prepare was something I was really interested in, to see how much better I could get. And then also to have this great experience of being able to travel the world. So I played in Israel, but then we went to Turkey and Malta and all these different parts of Europe and the Middle East. And it was a really cool experience. It was a very challenging experience for me, too, because like I said, I'd had this amazing college basketball experience with my college teammates, with my coaches, with having that balance of academics and intellectual rigor was actually something that was more important to me than I realized.
You come back to a firm called Mitchell Madison Consulting. For listeners less familiar, this is the early, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. What was Mitchell Madison back then?
Yeah, so it was a spinoff of McKinsey and A.T. Kearney. It was a bunch of partners from those consulting companies that spun off with a focus on, you know, technology, actually. We ultimately were acquired by a technology company during the dot-com boom and then bust. So Mitchell Madison Group was about 6 years old. It was an early consulting company. We worked with, you know, many of the Fortune 100 companies. My clients at the time included folks like HarperCollins and American Express. And actually during that time was my first exposure to technology, where I worked with American Express on the implementation of the first intranet. I know that sounds like really old now.
We're not that old, listener, I promise.
But that was understanding what was needed within an organization, helping with aligning technology and business people to create something that helped unify the organization. But it was my first real exposure to technology in a meaningful way.
Jess, I always feel like on some level, first jobs, I always say, are sort of formative, right? Like, what lessons do you remember from that experience that you carry with you?
I'm trying to think about what consulting is like today, and I think it's different than it was then, where you go to work in the morning and you don't know what time you're coming home at night, and you definitely never made plans on the weekend because you just never knew when you were going to get called in. So I think it was, in many ways, a lot of trial by fire, which was, I didn't have the training coming out of college that many people do in consulting. And so I had to work, like, I felt three times as hard. But then broadly, what's great about consulting is that you get exposure. I got exposure to a lot of different industries and functions within companies that helped me understand where there were differences and unique areas. And I think very quickly, I understood that I wasn't that interested in the financial services part of the business. And I wasn't especially interested in book publishing, which was the work with HarperCollins. And so in short order, I said, you know, what I really am interested in is thinking about applying some of these concepts to the sports and entertainment industry, which, again, at that time, sports and entertainment was not as big of a business as it is today.
Yeah.
But I think for me, I grew up going not to many, but to a few sporting events with my family. And they were the like highlights of some of my childhood memories. And I just thought it'd be so fun to be on the other side, helping to create those memories.
All All right, Jess, so before you got there, you made the decision to go back, as you say, to get your MBA. You went to Harvard Business School. Why was that the right step to get you to where you wanted to go eventually?
This is a great question. And I think there's a couple of things that are important. So one, as a woman, I felt very strongly that I wanted to have a family. And I thought that the HBS kind of credibility or stamp of approval, if I decided to have children and had to leave the workforce, I thought it was very important, transparently, to have that. The second thing is just a great way to accelerate my learning of business across, again, many different industries and disciplines in a very short period of time. And when I went to HBS, it was during the dot-com boom. So they actually offered an 18-month program. So I think that that was very appealing to me, especially because I was so focused on the industry that I wanted to go into, which was sports. So HBS ended up being really like a confidence builder, which I think for many women, even those of us who have been part of the Title IX generation, you know, we didn't have role models to look up to see that they had been able to balance all of these different elements.
What I love about that, Jess, is that future events will very much confirm that HBS was smart to let you in. Okay, so you graduate, Jess, and you end up joining up with the Kraft family, owners of the New England Patriots, the New England Revolution, Gillette Stadium, amongst other businesses. Now, that is one of those jobs and situations that people hear about and get really jealous. Like, that's just cool. How did that opportunity present itself? How did you get there?
You know, right timing, right place, right organization. During my second year at HBS, it was the year that Gillette Stadium was being built. And the Krafts have made a huge investment. It was privately financed, which is unheard of even then, but especially now. And actually, we started our team, which was a couple of my other classmates. We did a field study to help define what Gillette Stadium, how it could be leveraged on non-game days as an asset.
And let me interrupt only to say, you know, Gillette Stadium was in a part of the Northeast that, you know, now is booming and is amazing, but it wasn't a lot around it. Like, there was just like, is this how you can actually make this work was a very important question at the time, Jess.
Yeah, I think the vision that Robert and Jonathan Kraft had, locals from Massachusetts, from Boston, and wanting to keep the Patriots here and made the decision to keep the Patriots in New England and in Boston in particular. And then on top of that, invested to create a better experience. When we came out here, our team started our field study in November of 2001, and then the Patriots obviously won the Super Bowl in January of that year. We were in the middle of doing a project, again, how to maximize this asset. And so we effectively wrote a business plan, and we did a really great job. So we gave our presentation, and as I was leaving, you know, they basically said, let us know if we can open any doors for you in sports. And I actually was not a big football fan. I didn't really follow the NFL. I was a basketball player. So I actually thought I was going to go work at the NBA. I had an offer there. And I was like, well, I should just give these folks a call since I've been doing all this work. And this was about 3 weeks before I graduated. And I actually was like, oh, can you give me some advice on how to negotiate this offer? Which was, by the way, not the best decision because I told them how much the offer was for. And lesson learned. But then they basically created a role for me, which was at the time effectively an internal consultant for a lot of what is now Patriot Place, which is a 1.3 million square foot real estate development that sits adjacent to Gillette Stadium, as well as a number of other kind of internal related projects like moving the Patriots training camp.
Yeah. So tell me about that, because it's always interesting. You know, people see the NFL team as the product on the field, but there's so much that goes on behind that people don't always understand. So yeah, tell me what you were up to. Like, what was the kind of projects you were working on during those early days?
When I was thinking and graduating from business school, my goals were kind of threefold. One, I wanted to be in Boston. Two, I wanted to work in the sports industry. And three, I wanted to work with people who I could learn from and who I thought were approaching business in a different way. And the Krafts obviously have completely transformed the sports industry and the approach. And even then, the types of work that we were doing, again, like a lot of it was around Patriot Place, but even more so, very quickly, there was an understanding that the Patriots were developing a very strong fan base that was not just in New England. And understanding those customers, in particular, snowbirds, because at the time, the only way that sports teams really monetized their fan base was through tickets at games. And of course, media was a thing, but not to the extent that it is direct to consumer today. So very early on, some of the first projects and focuses were around creating a credit card program with Bank of America. Well, at the time, it was MBNA, where a customer, any customer, earned points that they could then redeem for Patriots experiences. To me, that was the early days of understanding, here's marketing efforts that you take, here's how many customers you acquire, here's how you engage directly, and here's how you can see the avidity of a fan based on how much they're willing to spend on their credit cards. By the way, we did some like crazy things. Oh, it's going to be 1,000,000 points to be able to play a football game on the field. Not thinking anyone would get it for years, but then someone put all of their business expenses
amazing
on that and got it within 6 months.
You undervalued the obsession of the fans. I love it. That's amazing.
And by the way, there was a lot of regulations that limited the number of people who could get credit cards, as we all know. So this concept of data capture, and this was before Facebook and really before Amazon. I mean, Amazon was selling books at the time. Google was in the early stages. So this concept of direct to consumer and that tracking as business world, that was just kind of starting. So we were really at the early days and seeing how strong this fandom was and that we could build and create something off of the interest and fandom. You look at the media rights that are going on today, for those of you listening to the podcast, I mean, obviously Amazon is paying $10 billion to have access to NFL media rights to be able to live stream them. I mean, that's how valuable this customer base is.
All right. How did working for a sports franchise impact your fandom? Like, can you relax on game day, or are you spending your entire time fretting about the operation?
So when I was working for the Patriots, absolutely not, because what happens on the field impacts the activities and how you're going to engage the fans after. And then, of course, like what the postseason means. We used to joke when the Patriots would go to the Super Bowl that it's like we were managing a cruise ship, which we just got the directions on the day before we left on a cruise, because we're basically transporting 5,000 people to wherever the event is. We're dealing with their hotel, their flights, what are the events that you're having. And I was responsible for a lot of the data collection and then management and ensuring that people had the right experiences, managing the ticketing and all of that stuff. So very stressful. I also was very bad at fantasy football because I missed half of the games because you never watch the game.
I mean, you have a reputation to protect, right? As like a sports data person, I'm sure everybody assumes you're going to be great at it, right? This is a disaster.
Well, so Daryl Morey, who I co-founded the Sloan Conference with, he runs basketball operations for the 76ers, and I'm in his fantasy football league. And he would just be like, you're so bad. I'm the only person in the league who hasn't won. And for the first, 14 years or so, I said, well, I don't watch half the games because I'm working. Anyways, I don't have that excuse anymore.
You talk about being ahead of the curve in a lot of what you've done, and you have been. 2006, you're part of a group with Daryl Morey that founds the Sports Analytics Conference at MIT Sloan. And 2006 is early in sports analytics. Like in 06, ESPN wasn't quoting advanced sabermetrics at the time. Tell me how that all came together as an idea for you guys.
Sure. So Daryl and I were teaching a class at MIT, and then he was offered the job to go and run the Houston Rockets on the basketball side. So literally over a drink, he and I conceived of the Sloan Conference and thought it would be something that would be interesting to do that would enable us to stay connected to Sloan with the schedules that we both had.
And Jess, what was the idea? Like, what was the subject matter being discussed, even in those small beginnings?
The whole focus was around the application of analytics on the team side and on the business side. So, Moneyball had come out, I think, in 2003. So baseball was the team or the league that had really adopted it. And Daryl was trying to bring that concept to the NBA. And then I was on the other side of the house on the business side with customers and the supply chain and inventory management for ticketing, bringing those same concepts to the business side. And so the conference was really about bringing like-minded people who have a passion for analytics and applying it to sports. And so the first year, it was basically a one-day Saturday session. We had maybe 7 or 8 panels, and it was pretty simple. Today, it's over 2,000 people. It's 2 days. We have 3 concurrent panels. We have competitive advantage presentations where people are talking about the work they're doing in sports. We have many competitions, research papers, hackathons.
President Obama has spoken at your conference. I mean, it's amazing.
President Obama, Nate Silver, ESPN's been the presenting sponsor for over a decade. But two like amazing panels that we got awesome feedback on. One was a transgender athlete panel that Malcolm Gladwell led. Just like a phenomenal perspective and insight on the challenges. And then also, obviously, we had a ton on like Title IX last year. But there's always going to be these like big topics. Probably the big one for this year are the challenges with sexual harassment that are happening. You see it in Washington with the Commanders, with the Phoenix Suns, obviously with the NWSL and the Yates Report. So we're trying to help move the entire industry forward and support the use of analytics, not only for what's happening on the field, which is very interesting, and there's more data available than ever before, but also with the customer experience. And then also with like, what is the industry? What is the makeup of the industry in terms of people who are entering into it?
Jess, it's fascinating. And what an accomplishment. 16 years on, I think it's just totally amazing.
Thank you.
Okay. So we mentioned it a couple times, but in 2016, you become the CEO of Kraft Analytics Group. What precisely does your business do?
Yeah. So the whole point is helping sports and entertainment organizations know their customer better. We kind of think of ourselves as the hub of the fan experience, but there's two parts to it. One is a technology. We actually have a data warehouse. We're the data warehouse for the Philadelphia 76ers, for the Sacramento Kings, for the Eagles, obviously for the Patriots, but we're actually ingesting all of their primary customer data. Most organizations, they don't know the basic descriptive data. I use this example a lot, but like, okay, here's like the basic descriptive. How many season ticket members do you have by tenure and where are they sitting within a venue? That's just basic information. And how much are they overall spending in value? That's basic descriptive information. Predictive is like, what is their likelihood to renew if you increase ticket prices by this amount? And then the prescriptive, the so what, is, okay, now you know that, what are the decisions you're going to make around the amenities that they have, about your price increases, based on that information. And so the Amazons of the world are obviously dependent on the person adjusting the price that you're paying based on your historical spending behavior, right? Most industries are nowhere near that sophisticated. Just getting to a place where you can have that data in a consolidated environment with like, here's the use cases of what we're going to do with this data. That's critical. So we know the industry, we know the data sets, and we also knew like the kind of key metrics that you need to evolve. And then the consulting is very important to help understand where it is you need to go. But what we don't want to do is just be like, okay, here's a nice report. We want to root it in a solution to teach you to fish, because that's going to be much more valuable long-term for the organization.
Well, Jess, let's fast forward a couple of years. If you look back in 3 years, what will you consider success? Like, tell me your biggest near-term goals for the Kraft Analytics Group.
I mean, for me, it's about, there's like kind of three things that I think about with respect to the business. One is profitable growth. As a six-year-old company, obviously, the economy is in an interesting place right now. You know, we're profitable, which is a big focus, and I think different than how organizations have grown most recently as a young company. A lot of our clients and prospects are referrals. And that's really, to me, speaks to the quality of the work that we're doing, the relationships that we have, and the impact that we're providing for our clients. So profitable growth. The second thing is the sports industry is evolving very, very quickly in terms of what the customers want and what they need. You know, today with Kraft Analytics Group, we touch over 45 million sports fans. That's not our data. That's our clients' data, but it gives us perspective and anonymized data to really create very impactful models with the trends of how fans and customers want to consume sports, whether that's attending, whether that's watching. This younger generation, they are consuming sports very differently. And it's a constant question of where we need to go, because we work across so many different sports and leagues. We have a better feel for how sports is evolving and how fandom is evolving. The third one is just about the culture of Kager. One of the great things about sports is just that it's a really fun industry to work in. And creating a fun environment, but also one that is focused on growth and training and development, is very important to me. And that's what I want Kager to be known for. Also for diversity, 65% of our executive team is women. And I want to ensure that we're inspiring kind of the next generation to be confident that data can create a level playing field for everyone, really. You know, it, of course, sometimes it's women, sometimes it's other diversity, but it's even like introverts who maybe don't feel like they have a voice, but data can help give them confidence in what they're saying. So I think like sports kind of has, in some cases within teams, has gotten a little bit of a bad rap for not taking care of their people. And I'd like to change that and flip that script.
First of all, I think that's awesome. I'd also say that as lucky as you were to play with Kathy Delaney Smith as a coach, I'm sure your folks are lucky to have you as a leader going forward too, Jess. With that, before we get to the last segment of the podcast, I want to take you through a speed round of questions. I'm going to ask you a series of questions. You just give me a simple answer, first thought, best thought. You ready?
Okay, yeah.
Favorite away NFL stadium? Favorite place to watch a game that isn't Gillette?
Gosh. Eagles, Philadelphia Eagles, Link.
An amazing answer that I didn't expect. A dedicated fan base, surely. All right, your favorite Super Bowl halftime performance ever?
Oh, that was so hard. I think I'm going to go with Katy Perry. She was awesome.
Famously left shark. All right, your favorite sport to watch these days? What are you enjoying the most?
I mean, I'm going to have to go with women's basketball. I think it's the best I've ever seen it. The college game is really, really, really fun to watch. And the kind of fun byproduct for me is I have two boys, 6 and 9, and my 9-year-old, he's a huge women's basketball fan. I've convinced him. So we watch games together, and he actually knows more about the players than I do, which is pretty awesome.
Favorite sport to play these days? Do you still get out there, Jess?
I've had a series of injuries.
We're on the sideline.
I don't play. I do pickup a couple times a year. But I mean, we're kind of closer to our 50s than we let on to be.
We both sound great, Jess.
Yeah. I'm like, ooh, it's hard to like keep working if you like, you know, hurt yourself.
Exactly.
Peloton. I'm into Peloton.
There you go. What's your favorite dinner date destination in Boston? Favorite restaurant?
Menton. That's where I propose to my wife.
Oh, amazing.
And where we go every year on our wedding anniversary.
What a perfect answer. All right. Favorite sports movie ever?
Hoosiers.
Hoosiers. I love it.
Or actually, I also love Cutting Edge.
I'll allow both. Amazing. All right. With that, then, let's move to the actual last segment of the podcast, which is something we like to call Best Ideas, where we offer up something that's added value in our lives recently. Jess, you're our guest. I'm going to ask you to go first. What's your best idea this week?
I've been reading Billie Jean King's autobiography. We had her speak at a Title IX event that we hosted at Gillette Stadium this past June. And I was so inspired by her. And I think like her focus on educating the next generation and history being a good, like you can't know where to go if you don't understand the history. There's a lot of data related components there for me, which is the history and the data sets provide perspective to guide and inform into the future. And I think like I look at her as someone who impacted through as a player. I was not nearly the athlete that she was, as an entrepreneur, and then from a societal perspective. And I think there's just a lot to aspire to be like. And she's really inspires me to do more and try and be more and, you know, to involve my family in all of those different aspects.
Her autobiography, All In. Yeah, it's fantastic. My wife and I, who you know, we always go to the U.S. Open every year. And the single biggest pop every year is when they show Billie Jean King on the big screen. Like, it's awesome. The place erupts. It makes me really happy every time. Okay, for my idea this week, as listeners know, I like to be inspired by my guest. Jess, as we've discussed, was a legendary basketball guard and has continued her work in the world of sports for her profession. And that got me thinking about basketball and actually one of my favorite basketball books or sports books, period. My best idea this week is the amazing book Dream Team by Jack McCollum. So 1992 Olympics in Barcelona, first time the NBA players were allowed into the competition. And the U.S. squad was an all-star team with a starting lineup in the gold medal match of your guy, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Karl Malone, Magic Johnson, and Patrick Ewing. I mean, it's insane. And what's great about the book is 1992 is sort of ancient history, really, relative to media today. Like, there were no Twitter posts about behind-the-scene drama, no Instagram stories about practices. And so while you know what happened, you know, spoiler alert, they ran through the competition on their way to winning gold, McCollum does this incredible job of taking you behind the curtains and telling you all the real stories of what was going on the ground. It's a sports book, but it's really a moment in time book. Like, pros in the Olympics are pretty common in most disciplines now, but this was a truly unique time for basketball, and McCollum writes about it beautifully. So In honor of one of the greatest Harvard Hoops guards of all time, let me recommend a great read about arguably the greatest team of all time, The Dream Team by Jack McCallum. You ever read that, Jess?
I haven't read that, but obviously that was when I was a senior in high school. And what I love about that team is now, when you see how international the NBA is, that was the precipice for all of it.
It's where it's all started. That's right.
Because it inspired the next generation of kids internationally to go and play basketball. And by the way, that's why I think what's happening in women's sports today with the NWSL and the WNBA and the increasing opportunities to watch women's sports, why it's so important, because it's going to inspire the next generation of women to go into sports. And then hopefully that will translate into more women in business and in leadership roles.
Fantastic. Jess, with that, it's time to wrap it up for the week. Sincerely appreciate you taking the time to come on the show, and it's always so great to catch up.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to our guest, Jessica Gelman. Check out our show notes to learn more about Jess and her company, Kraft Analytics Group. You'll also find links to her best idea, the autobiography All In by Billie Jean King, and mine, Dream Team by Jack McCallum. This podcast was brought to you by At Will Media with HPS Investment Partners. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen. The opinions expressed on this podcast are that of the host, Colbert Cannon, and the guest of each episode, and do not necessarily reflect the views of HPS Investment Partners.